Hello, welcome to Star Wars Spelt Out. I'm your host, Josh Chapman. And today, returning guests, ooh, love a returning guest, as I always say. And today, we ought to see him shrink into his seat when I say this, but the best in the biz, the best going around. I think the best part Star Wars podcaster, bar none. But you can see his face going bright red as you say it. But let's just get him on from Blue Harvest and other stuff as well. High Potion as well. Horst Burkhardt. Hello, Richard. How are you?
Hey, Joshua. How are you, buddy? Using my first name, my government name.
The one on the driving license?
Yep.
Have you ever said where Horst? Is that just a family nickname? I know you're a junior. You're a junior, aren't you?
Well, and it goes a little deeper than a junior. Like, it goes so deep that there's not even, like, a number or anything. Like, so my dad is also a Richard Burkhardt. And that's like a family thing. The dudes are Richard Burkhardt with a different middle name. Halls is actually my middle name. Oh. And that's why they call me Halls instead of calling me Richard, because there would have been two Richards in the house.
So is it like the Phantom? Do you carry on the mantle? Do you become Richard when Richard Sr.
Maybe
moves off this earth?
Probably not, though. I mean, you know, when I started I had changed jobs a couple years ago, and I interact with the public for the first time in a long time, and I just go by Richard there because I don't want to explain to
it's easier than to
you
have
know
to,
clients like, every day.
So it's just I like that. I like the family. It's just like a thing that rolls on. Yeah, it's like you're not Indiana Jones. You're actually closer to Mutt. You're like the third or fourth down the.
Yeah, my dad is Richard Walter. And I'm Richard Halls. I can't remember what my granddad's middle name was, but it also started with Richard.
Good. Traditions are good. You know, roll it along. I never asked that. There you go. I know every now and then, I think Christmas time, you know, I have this weird tradition because on a podcast once you were talking about oysters and you'd never had a fresh oyster.
Yep.
And every time I have a fresh oyster, which is usually around Christmas time because we eat a lot of seafood at Christmas in Australia, I will send Hawes a photo of eating oysters. I was going, Merry Christmas, Richard. On it for some reason, I always keep it very formal at Christmas time.
Yeah, formal Christmas time. That makes sense. I still haven't had raw oysters. I've had prepared oysters. I'm a big fan down in New Orleans, which is, you know, about 5 hours south of me. Mm-hmm. They do char grilled oysters, which are incredible. But I've still not had a fresh one in. Be honest, I'm waiting to go to a place where I feel like I'm not going to get the norovirus from having raw oysters.
Yeah, some are better than others. I mean, I've had them off the rocks before, where you're just like at the ocean with a screwdriver and you're just like, as nature intended, that's about as fresh as it gets. But usually they've got a bit of crap in them as well. If they've been cleaned and they're served up nicely with a bit of lemon and everything, it'll happen one day. Hopefully I'm there. You know, I'm thinking, you know, Celebration Japan 2025.
A nice oysters. I bet you we can find a real nice place to have some oysters. We'll mark that down as a tentative.
Japan in general. I mean, there's a million things. Oh. Is that still a dream? I mean, I know it's a dream, but
So I am actively working on planning on it. My idea is because next year I'll be at my current job for 3 years. And when I hit 3 years, I get an extra week of vacation every year.
Nice.
So my hope, if I can swing it, kind of depends on how treatment and everything goes this year, is 2 weeks and sort of end with Celebration.
Yeah. Then you'll just be an absolute, you know, to excuse the pun, you know, master of Japan.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
Kensai Sakai from Coast of Tsushima. You know, you got me into that game. Actually, I'd sort of seen it in passing and never really paid much attention. It was you raving about it that made me buy it.
It was my game of the year in 2020. Yeah, it came out during the pandemic.
That's a long time to not hear anything about a sequel. Actually, we've fallen down High Potion, but you'd feel like that something would be bubbling on that.
Well, So, you know, there have been job postings from that studio that kind of made it seem like they were working on a sequel. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping, because Ghost of Tsushima was one of those games that got announced and then we didn't hear much about it for a little while, right? Yeah. And it got kind of frustrating. I'm hoping maybe that studio and Sony are waiting to announce it when it's, you know, going to be coming out fairly soon. I said this last year, I'm going to say this every year until it happens, but I'm kind of wondering if it'll get announced this summer in the June area where they do all the big announcements and then maybe come out in the fall, winter of this year, because there's not a big Sony exclusive scheduled for that time of year yet. So
I've fallen down this Last of Us rabbit hole because the document, they released the documentary about the making of The Last of Us 2 quite recently, mm-hmm. which I watched all the way mm-hmm. through, which was amazing. And it's really quite funny to see that, you know, because they actually released the game through COVID and all this other, they had leaks and all this other stuff and blah, blah, blah. And just the attitudes of, you know, the studio and stuff. And then I sort of went, all right, great. Oh, they did a documentary for the first one. I'll watch that, which is, you know, whatever, 7 or 8 years, 10 years earlier. And there's a mm-hmm. whole section where they're just like, oh, I love Crunch. Crunch is the best time of the, you know, we all get down and we all rally around for Crunch. And I'm like, wow, things have changed already since then.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things I feel like over the last couple of years, the general public has become more aware of that term of crunching while developing a video game. And it's pretty awful. You hear some real horror stories. And I don't know that Naughty Dog were one of the main or the worst offenders, but you know, like, I love video games. I am so, I like the second part of the remake of my favorite game of all time comes out in 10 days and I'm ridiculously excited. But if it takes another year or a few months for me to play a game and it means that they're not like beating their employees into the ground to get it to me, I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah, I think that's the attitude that's changed now. And especially like a big studio like that that's coming off a hit where you think that they've got the resources. I mean, obviously, you know, GTA 6 is the big one where they're like, mm-hmm. it's going to take another year. We could, you know, we don't want the press.
Mm-hmm.
You want to ride your little jet ski and shoot alligators, you're just going to have to wait a little bit longer, everybody.
You know, honestly, I feel like the first big story that broke that sort of clued the mainstream public into this idea of crunch on video game development was Red Dead 2. Mm. There was a pretty big story about crunch on that, and the heads up at the studios did not address it publicly super well at the time. And after that, they kind of came out, Rockstar, and said, like, we're going to work on it. We're going to work on our crunch culture, but it's going to take longer for games to come out. And honestly, that's fine. There are so many games coming out nowadays. It's not like, you know, I only have one game I'm looking forward to.
They're not like Star Wars
right?
movies, bringing around a Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly.
That's an interesting one, because it's like, do you reckon it'll get to a, you know, like a point, like if they're doing, say they're doing Star Wars and they're doing, all right, Mando and Grogu, and they go like, okay, Mando and Grogu is coming out supposedly 2026 or whatever it is.
Right.
And if we get to, say, January 2026 and Lucasfilm come out and they go, hey, either we crunch, we smash our employees to get that movie in the summer, or you're going to have to wait till Christmas. Do you think they could actually, I know stuff gets delayed, but do you think they could actually come out onto the stage and just say, hey, this is just taking longer than we thought, rather than rush this thing out?
Well, so I would hope that the fandom would be understanding and be like, yeah, that's fine. Like, we've waited this long, what's a few more months? Mm. Now, that's not what would happen. That is a very optimistic.
It would be
sort
an excuse to point fingers at the people running the operation, really.
Right? Exactly. Now, I will say this. It looks like, and you know, that kind of stuff is always kind of hard to suss out if it's true or not, but it kind of looks like that movie is going to start shooting in like 4 months or so. Right.
Yeah.
And that would mean, you know, depending on how long the shooting for that movie is, 6 months or so, they're going to have quite a lot of time for post-production. If that movie is going to make like the May 2026 release date or whatever it might be.
In my head, like, because it was, obviously I was, you know, I saw Return of the Jedi as a kid and sort of lived through the no Star Wars movies. But as far as the time between Star Wars movies when things were happening, it was always like the prequels was my you know, the thing that I judge all things by. So therefore, right. in my head, a Star Wars movie always takes 3 years to make. Like, it always feels like that's the time it makes. So when they were putting, you know, like Force Awakens, Last Jedi within 2 years, I was like, oh my God, what are they doing? Like, this seems like, you know, and obviously it did go off the rails because they couldn't make those, you know. That's why Rise of Skywalker turned out the way that it did, because they were trying to hit that 2 year.
Yeah, and to be honest, like, I remember as a kid in the, you know, sort of earlier days of the internet following the production of The Phantom Menace, and in like 1997 seeing like leaked set pictures of Tatooine and stuff, being like, it's going to take them 2 years before we see this movie. The heck?
What are they
doing?
You
know, obviously with the prequels, they were working with a lot of sort of cutting edge technology, especially with the second and third movie being shot completely digitally, right? So that definitely increased, you know, the time they needed for production. And you have to guess, you have to imagine they're going to use the volume and stuff on Mandalorian and Grogu. Awful name, by the way.
Yeah.
Which helps cut that down.
Yeah. Will you get down to see Phantom Menace at the cinema?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've been doing for the last almost 5 years is complaining about not having Star Wars movies in the theater. So it might be one I've seen 100 times, but I'm going.
I was thinking about that the other day, thinking about like, oh, you know the movie back to front. I'd love if they just did a little special edition tweaking, didn't tell anyone.
Yeah, because there's some cool stuff in the deleted scenes. I don't know how long it's been since you've seen the deleted scenes for Phantom Menace, but there's like completed scenes, like with full effects and stuff. Specifically, when they come up out of the water after, you know, the underwater sequence, there's like this scene where the submarine is about to go off of a waterfall or something, and Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon, and Jar Jar have to escape. Just throw that in there. Yeah. Surprise
or
me.
Or just put completely new stuff in. Just put Grogu. Yeah. Put Grogu in there. We all know he was.
Yeah,
in the
put
Jedi.
Grogu in
he's
there. Kylo Ren.
Grogu's just sitting on like Mace Windu's lap. They just cut to Samuel L. Jackson. Like, all right. Well, I guess they're doing that then. I guess there's no secret that he was there. Like,
oh, you know,
not?
they'll put an after credit sequence for Mandalorian and Grogu, and it's Samuel L. Jackson hanging out with Grogu post Episode 3.
Just hanging off the side of the building. Sam Jackson found his way through. Yeah, why not? Keep tinkering, I say.
Yeah, I mean, I guarantee if they rang up George Lucas and asked him if he had any special edition changes he wanted to make to The Phantom Menace, he'd have them, you know?
That's interesting, actually. I suppose, would you go back to George? I feel like because the famous last, you know, the last tinkering was obviously the McClunky, the final. Mm-hmm. It was like he planted the bomb in the middle of the Death Star and didn't tell anyone until he sold everything, until the final, this 4K thing that had been sitting on for years had just come out. Like, I love that final kiss off.
That's classic George Lucas, and I love it because it's so wacky.
I hope he's got something up his sleeve. I reckon he'd be up for it. I don't know, the last Phantom Menace thing I always think of with George Lucas was the thing he shot in the toilet or wherever it was in the restaurant for the 20th anniversary panel at Celebration Chicago. Were you in that? It was almost like someone just came up to him while he was eating like his lunch and just went, what do you think of the Phantom Menace, George? And he was like, oh, 20 years. Oh, yeah, well, thanks for coming.
I want to see if they do like a full-blown like promotion for Phantom Menace. Is there going to be like theater tie-ins and stuff? I hope so. And then I have to imagine that for the next 6 years, we're probably going to get re-releases Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith as well.
It's quite interesting because I feel like, you know, George must be in his 80s by now, or near his 80s by now, as far as his age. And I became quite conscious of this in the last couple of years, probably just post-COVID, of there being a lot of retrospective stuff that Paul McCartney had done, where he did like the thing with Rick Rubin. He went all through the tracks. There was a bunch of other things. He seemed to be like a couple of documentaries, a whole bunch of things. It felt like he was really making sure he had said everything he needed to say about all the stuff as he got older in life, you know, while he's still kind of rolling pretty good. Like, I think Disney should consciously be like, we've got to get, maybe he will, maybe he won't, but we've got to get as much final word on all this stuff from George, whether it's interviews, him talking about stuff, commentaries, documentaries, and get it all, get the final word in, because he's probably only got a good 10, maybe he lived till he's another 10 years, he's going to be 90. So this is probably the last decade to get the best out of him.
Yeah, and you know, it seems like he's really focused on that museum in LA, which I'm gonna have to check out whenever it's done. I think it's next year that it opens.
That's been going for ages, hasn't it? Because they kicked him out of Chicago or something, didn't they? So
yeah, that was the original plan, I think, was for it to be in Chicago.
Man, well, that'll be good because they'll do another celebration, I reckon, at LA at some stage. So everybody can just take a day trip, get down there.
I mean, to be completely honest, if they do a celebration in 2026, we might have the first celebration that lines up pretty directly with the Star Wars movie. Like back, you know, because back during the prequels, when Celebration started, those celebrations happened like weeks before those movies came out.
They'd have to be careful because you wouldn't want to do it as it came out. Like they did Anaheim, Obi-Wan came out, but everybody could go home and watch it on their respective screens. You do it the week a Star Wars movie comes out. There's only so many screens that are, you know, if say it's in Anaheim, there's probably only like four or five cinemas and, you know, 50,000 Star Wars fans can't see the new Star Wars movie.
I would think it'd probably be a couple weeks before, you know, that seemed to be what they did back in the day. Now, granted, it's, you know, completely different people running it now, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was a couple of weeks before if that Star Wars movie actually comes out in May of 2026.
It feels like a shoe-in to do that back to, you know, well, they haven't been back in the state. They wouldn't have been back in the States for a few years then. It's a movie here. It kind of, even Japan felt like a little bit of a left turn, really, at the time. I mean, we were happy as being in Australia because it's a bit closer for us, but at the same time, for them to go, wow, like miss three whole years and no American one just seemed like, whew.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised. I would have to imagine that the next American one will be in Anaheim or Orlando, you know, with the Disney presence in both of those cities. Yeah. I know it. Like, if there's ever one in Birmingham, Star Wars is in trouble. Like, like
you go and it's just at the back of this parking lot somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, we have a very nice convention center. It's where me and Steve and Will went to see Tool a few weeks ago. But like, it pales in comparison to the ones I've been to for Star Wars Celebration.
Tony
so
Daniel's just in a car wash across the road, kind of thing, on a car table
place.
I'd be all down for that. Yeah, it's the same for Australia. You know, we've got really good, we've got an amazing convention center in Melbourne, but it's just, you just can't get, you're not getting Hamill on a plane all the way to Australia to sign autographs. It's just not going to happen. It's just too far.
I honestly feel like it'll happen someday. I mean, especially with the heritage of the prequel shooting or two of the prequels
that's
shooting
true. That
over
would
there,
probably
you know?
Be the only thing. And then at least you can tap the cast members of all of those, you're still in Australia and stuff. But yeah, we dream, but we travel. So it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I've fallen down. I don't know whether, I know you're a collector. You get a whole bunch of different stuff, and you moved house recently, so you've probably become very aware about all the crap that you've got.
Big time, buddy.
I decided this year to go for the vintage Kenner run.
Oh, I love to hear that, buddy.
Have you got that collection? Have you got?
Mm-mm. I've got a sizable one, but I am nowhere close. Mm-mm. You know, those, they call them the last 17. Those figures are what have kind of scared me away from pursuing the complete collection, because when you get into that last 17 era, which, you know, is like Amon or whatever the hell his name is, Face, Stormtrooper Luke, some of those are very expensive.
Man, I'm living that right now. So
you know, your R2-D2, I vividly remember you showing me your R2-D2 on one of the shows I came on.
Yeah.
And that's an expensive R2 because he's the one that had the pop-out saber.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's helped me a little bit because I haven't had to buy him. But I'm in the throes of it now, and I've gone pretty hard. And I sort of started with a bulk lot that somebody on Facebook was selling. So I got a really good base. I got sort of like 45 figures off the jump for quite a...
Okay.
I won't go into prices, but it was expensive, but it wasn't outrageous. And he had a few last 17s Ewoks in there. So that kind of took the sting
a little bit.
Okay, you
know. All right.
So I've kind of gone to this. I've been going through the last few weeks, you know, using combination of eBay, you know, trader groups here. I ordered a bunch from a store in the Netherlands, because their prices were, some of their last 17 prices were amazing compared to other stuff. So I got, but I've been going for very like incomplete, don't necessarily have to have the weapons. And in some cases, don't have to be in amazing condition, especially last seven. So my, I got an Amana Man, but I got him probably 50% off what you would normally get, and because his arm isn't attached.
So I gotcha.
Got his arm, but he's, it's, I got to put a little bit of, do you have blue tack in America? Do you know if I say blue tack?
Yeah.
You know what that is? Yeah. So I put a bit of blue tack on there. He'll be fine. The EVD9, you know that like, you are a protocol droid, are you not that prick droid?
Brown droid? Yeah.
I got one of those probably, you know, more than half price off because it was missing an arm. And I'm like, you know what? If I'm just staring over at the side of my collection, you know, I could probably live with that for the time being. So there's a lot of compromises. I'm making a lot of sort of compromises on quality for price and stuff. But
well, and you know, the thing I like about vintage collecting is like you can always wait it out and upgrade your figures as you go. Yep. You know, if you come across a good deal on a complete Amon Amon, you can upgrade your Amon Amon. You know what I mean? Like that's the nice thing about it. I think my mistake when I, because I really kicked off my vintage collecting in 2017 at Celebration Orlando, and I went there and I was like, you know what? I want a really nice condition, complete set of bounty hunters from Empire Strikes Back. And that was kind of where I was planning on stopping it. And it didn't stop there. I think maybe if I had been a little looser in my standards of what I wanted in my collection, I could have, you know, made some more headway on it. And then in 2020, the prices of all of that stuff, any kind of collectible, jumped up so high.
Yeah, it's, you know, it hasn't been cheap, but at the same time, I've gone pretty good. But I was, there was a lady selling a bulk of figures about a month ago. And she had, I don't know, 45 to 50 figures. She went $800 Australian, which isn't actually that bad. And she had a pretty good mix of stuff. She had, I think she had one last 17 Ewok, and she had a couple of things had blasters and blah, blah. But I had a fair bit of it already from the last lot. So I just sent her a message saying, hey, you know, would you consider splitting it up? She's like, nah. I'm like, all right, no problem. Month goes past, still up. Nothing. There's no movement. I write back, hey, would you consider splitting them up? I don't need as many as before, but I'd still, you know, I don't need 20 figures anymore, but I, you know, there's about 10. And she goes, well, what do you want? And I circled the thing and I said, you know, would you, and I think it was 10 figures. I was doing the math and I said, you know, it was about $180, $190. Would you like that? And she goes, oh no, I want a 450. I'm going, well, that math doesn't work. That's 10 figures.
That's over half.
That's over half.
10 figures.
Yeah. So then I've gone back. I've gone, all right, well, actually there's just one Ewok that I want. And what had happened was that, and maybe she's playing me the whole time. She had two Chief Chirpers. One of the Chief Chirpers had a headdress on it that was a last 17 Ewok, had the wrong headdress on it.
And I had a loose jackpot.
One. And I was like, you know what? I'll just take the Ewok. Can I just have that one Ewok, the Chief Chirper, this particular one? She goes, I want $80 for that. I'm like, maybe she knows exactly what she's got, but I don't think she does.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just going, man, I think I could have said anything. I could have just said, can I have a freaking Rancor Keeper?
Stormtrooper. Yeah.
Like, can I have a Crix Maydeen? $80. So that's just what I was dealing with. But that's all right. Fair enough. It's her stuff. She can do what she likes. So maybe she's like, this freaking nerd just thinks, but I don't know what I've got. And he's just trying to play me. So fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, the 2020 collecting bubble has popped a little, but I remember, you know, looking at prices of vintage Star Wars and some video game stuff around there, and it was just insane how much the prices jumped on some of that stuff.
Nobody left their house. They were just trolling on the...
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thought about doing it for a while, and then I had one or two vintage things, and then there was a guy who was selling a last 17 Luke with his, you know, like speeder bike Luke. So he had that little
helmet. Oh, yeah, with the helmet and the poncho and stuff.
But he was he was literally just the helmet. Like, the poncho was long gone, and it wasn't that expensive. And I've got this little sort of shelf where I've got a whole bunch of Return of the Jedi Luke stuff. And I thought, all right, I'll get that just to put in the... And that was the seed that was planted.
That's all it takes. I'm just getting this.
Yeah. Then all of a sudden you've got people sitting, you know, inviting you to Facebook groups. You troll in Marketplace. You troll in eBay. You've... It's got a grip on you. That plastic fever has got a grip on you. So it's been fun.
I imagine I will jump back in eventually. Now, I'm in the process of putting together all my displays in my new house. So I've been building lots of shelving and stuff and framing stuff. I had this big art portfolio just filled to the brim with art prints I picked up at Celebration and other conventions or bought online that I never framed. So I've been knocking those all out. And I was like, well, I need to knock out all of my sort of music and video game related prints first. And then I'll maybe start tackling the Star Wars ones, because there's a lot. And I started on the Star Wars ones last week. And like the amount of money I spent on just the first set of frames and stuff for those is bananas.
It looks so good.
Once I get that, I'll take it care. Yeah. I'm looking forward to, I've got a lot of it hung up upstairs now as far as my streaming / collecting room down here. I haven't started putting stuff on the walls, and I kind of need to pump the brakes on stuff meant for down here, because I don't know how much wall space is actually going to get taken up by all the stuff I've framed.
Well, you got like a dedicated, I know you bought a house recently, congratulations, being a homeowner, but you've got a dedicated room for all your shit. That's the dream, isn't it, really? Of just like,
that's
my space. No matter whatever happens, I've got my... This is where I can, you know, where I can entertain guests upstairs and not look like a crazy person and just keep that door locked if I need to. And then I can just wander down and soak it in.
Yep. Like a little goblin in my cave with all my treasures down here.
It's like those YouTube videos of like insane home, you know, video game collection and all that. You know, I love all of those sort of.
Yeah. And that's actually what I'm in the process of building shelving for now, is my video game collection, because over the last few years, I've been slowly working on acquiring a full collection of Star Wars video games. That's kind of one of my long-term collecting goals. And I'm trying to get them all complete in box. Now, that some of that older stuff becomes a little harder to do that for. And I also just have a lot of other dumb video game shit collectibles, Yakuza and Mass Effect and lots of Final Fantasy stuff.
Was there something that you found, like when you packed your life up and moved it to a new, like was there something when you got into the weeds, you just kind of gone, was just something that like you just forgotten that you bought and like what was I thinking? Like,
buddy, there absolutely was, and it's pretty much anything with a Kylo Ren card back. You know what I mean? Like, I have like in a box now. It's gonna look awesome because I've always wanted to have a 3¾-inch Star Wars display, and I've got a lot of figures on card, and I bought them with the intention of opening them up and putting them on stands. Just didn't have a place to do that at my old house. So that'll be cool. Like one day I'm going to sit here in my basement and open up all those figures and get them displayed. But I have like a complete run of, you know, Force Awakens, Rogue One, Last Jedi, Solo stuff. Cause they kind of, you know, didn't do a lot. And that's good. Yeah. But I've got like, there were for sure some figures from those lines that I paid way too much for that now when I go and look at them, I'm like, $4? Are you kidding me?
Black Series, because I went back and got the original run of the Black Series, like the orange blue stripe ones. And managed to sort of track them down. There was a online, like a Facebook seller who I got an amazing deal on. I got almost all of them on one thing. And the lady was clearly just telling her son's collection or her boyfriend's collection. She's just like, get them out of my house. But there were still a few that I needed. And now they just, you know, I think Bush Leia was the last one to get. And I got that on an auction thing. And I would have paid at least over $100 for it. And now I just see it on eBay for like $30-$40. You just can't give it away. I'm going, did it really depreciate that much? Even like the Anakin and the R2, like the really sort of chase ones of those.
And the first clone trooper was another one that was expensive for a long time. So around this time 2 years ago, I decided I'm getting rid of my Black Series stuff and my Funko Pops because I had too much of both. And I was like, I want to pare down the collection. I want to go for like quality over quantity, right? And so I got them all together in a lot now. I got rid of almost all my Funko Pops. There were a couple that were gifts and stuff. I was like, well, I'm going to keep these.
Yeah.
And I got rid of all my Black Series that weren't Boba Fett or other Mandalorians or Knights of the Old Republic figures. And like just the process of dusting them all, cause they'd been in boxes, organizing them all, taking pictures. And then the worst part, negotiating with people on Facebook Marketplace. Cause I didn't want to ship this stuff. Like it's, I think my Black Series were in three huge cardboard boxes. The Funkos were even more than that. They were all still in box.
Yeah, 40 Black Series and 800. And then they came back and said, I want 10. And you said, 450. And then they said, I want one. And you said, 80.
I definitely listed the Black Series and the Funkos for higher than I knew I would get, just so maybe I could have some negotiation room.
Yep.
And I got a lot of like, sort of bad faith offers were like, I'll give you $200 when I had it listed for like $1,300.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's a lot of convention exclusives in there too, which do hold their value pretty well. And the guy who finally ended up buying the Black Series figures off me, it was like 2 weeks of negotiating. He was like, can I just get the stuff from the prequels and the original trilogy and you can keep the sequel trilogy stuff and sell it off? And I was like, no, absolutely not.
Doing
you're going to take
done here. It's the whole thing.
Yeah. You're either taking all of it or you're taking none of it. And then, you know, he was looking at it and he could seriously see, cause you know, they're numbered. He would see where there were some numbers missing because they were Boba Fett or Mandalorians. He's like, you don't have a Boba Fett? And I was like, nope, don't have him.
Never heard
sorry.
Of him.
Don't Never know. Heard of him. Not me. And then the Funko Pops, I had listed for like a month or two and never got an offer on them. And I was like, dang, the Funko market really has crashed. I wish Corey lived around here because I know he'd buy these. And then a dude from Georgia, like a state over, messaged me and didn't even negotiate. He just wanted them for the price I had listed. And he was like, can you meet me halfway? And I was like, absolutely. I'm on my, where do you want to meet? I got to get rid of these things. So,
yeah, nice. Yeah.
At least I didn't have to move all those to the new house.
No. Well, I sold when I sort of knew I was going to have to start spending money on Kenner. I moved a few Black Series sort of high. Like I sold my Captain Rex, which they were going to reissue and then they didn't. So I got like $200 for him straight up.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So there was a few sort of ones that were somewhat rare that I was easy to, I could just move them. Like, oh, that's good. That just covers having to pay for a man with one arm and all that kind of
right,
stuff as well.
Yeah.
But there's still, I'm just looking over here. There's still some stuff that doesn't fit on the shelf that's just sitting down there. But I'm like, I'll just, we're getting some attic space put in our place next week. So we've got like an old house and we've got, you know, room in the roof to put some storage space up just because we've got our house is quite old and got stacks of storage. So I'll be able to just scoop up the things and put them in a box and just put them up there and not have to worry about them. And then one day they'll either be worth nothing or I'll have the space to display them somewhere, or then one day my children will just, you know, leave them on the front lawn for someone to pick up when I'm long gone.
Buddy, when I bought my house, one of the first things my parents said to me was, hey, since you have a place, can we finally bring all the Star Wars shit you've had stored at our house? I was like, yeah, absolutely, guys. Sorry about that. So in my basement on the other side, because like I have a staging area where there's like a guest bedroom in the basement. And then I have like my home office / streaming collecting room that I'm putting together.
Yep.
But there is stuff that I haven't seen in over two decades in there. Like one of the nights after I finally got moved and was settled in, I just went down in the basement and started opening like Rubbermaid containers. And
like
there's
Christmas again. Like, you should have been recording all of that. You probably
I decided, it's funny you mentioned that. I decided I got to stop doing this because there's some cool shit in here. And I think I am going to open some of those on stream.
Yeah, yeah.
I did have the horrific revelation that apparently my parents found my stash of Playboys because those were sitting right on top of one of those boxes.
Like, here you go.
And I was like, enjoy. Well.
Look who's back. Hello, Miss
found
October.
Old yearbooks from high school and all kinds of stuff.
It's nice that stuff doesn't get thrown out, though. Like, well,
yeah.
My fiance or my wife, my whatever partner, Kat, her younger brother has this immense Ninja Turtles collection, vintage Ninja Turtles collection.
Okay.
And he lived at home, you know, for years until he got married. And then he built a house a couple of years ago with his wife. And then all of a sudden, her mum and dad time to move those turtles on. They just had a child last year, but they built some sort of mega 5-bedroom, you know, they got room to burn. So there's plenty of room for those turtles to go. Mm-hmm. He had quite a lot of EU books too, actually. He's got a whole, you know, a whole shelf of them. He's quite good, actually. He's never gotten over them getting rid of it, but it doesn't really bother him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, I love those stories and I wish they were canon, but whatever, you know, which is the perfect attitude to have about it.
Yeah. I mean, listen, there's a lot of stories that I do like in there, but it also struggled for years before they got, you know, before they reset it. Those last few years of Star Wars. Yeah. If EU was rough.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be curious to see how far along we move. Because the thing with those books was that it was, as soon as it stopped being about the original characters, it was harder to maintain interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, you know, we're moving into an era where, you know, they're all, well, at least, you know, one, Carrie's no longer with us, but like all the characters in the canon are gone now. Mm-hmm. Unless you get a couple of convenient Force ghosts or something like that. You know, like if, I think, you know, Hamill will probably drag along as long as you ask him, but Carrie's done. Harrison Ford obviously is done. So we are going to drift away from those almost like the EU did. But I think obviously the sequel trilogy is coming on stronger footing.
Yeah.
As far as establishing Rey and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, I think, you know, I want to say, I can't remember the name of the last one. It might have been Crucible. There's a last EU book, right? That was kind of the furthest one in the timeline before they reset it. And I remember, you know, a bulk of the story was Han and Leia on an adventure with their granddaughter. Now they've got grandkids in the story.
Yep.
And it wasn't a half bad book, but I remember seeing sales figures for that book and they were bad. Like, yep. You know, there's more people reading Star Wars today by a long shot than we're reading that book.
Why are you buying the books, really? Mm-hmm. Which, of course, is just bullcrap. It's like you don't really care at all. Some of you do. Whatever. I'm not going to cast aspersions on all of that. Do you know when the Bad Batch starts? I mean, I know it starts tomorrow. Tomorrow,
I don't know
after.
The time.
Well, this is the thing. This is the time. We got a little Australian chat group that we all chat in, mm-hmm. and that was the question that got floated because obviously it used to be in the, you know, whatever was midnight LA time, which was sort of our early evenings, and mm-hmm. then Ahsoka changed it to whatever it was 8 p.m. or whatever, you know, which ended up being 11 a.m. in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of going, oh, like, am I gonna sit down at lunch tomorrow and there's going to be 3 episodes of The Bad Batch, or am I going to have to wait till the evening here? Doesn't seem to be a straight answer.
I haven't seen it either, which is weird. And I'm hoping they go the Ahsoka model because the way Ahsoka worked, I got off work and then 30 minutes later, Ahsoka was ready. And before, I was having to stay up to like 3 or 4 a.m. my time to watch and then record about it for Patreon. And I can't do that anymore. At least right now.
It's like me during the Soccer World Cup. You know, the alarm goes mm-hmm. up going, oh, Australia is playing the Netherlands at 3 in the morning. It's time to, you know, and that was for 3 games in a 2-week tournament, let alone, mm-hmm. hey, you got 2 months here of dragging your ass out of bed.
It sucks. I hope they go with the Ahsoka model because it definitely was more pleasant to watch at a normal time of day. Because in my time, if it goes up 12 Pacific, that's 2 a.m. for me. And then you got to figure, you know, if it's Mandalorian or something like that, probably an hour. And then recording about it, then getting ready for bed. It's not something I can really pull off currently. So
all of a sudden your alarm goes off and you're just like, didn't I just go to bed? Like, I'm just in this. Uh-huh. Little, oh my God.
Them real cranky talking to clients all day.
I can't deal right now. I was up all night watching a cartoon. And then I was talking about the cartoon. Then I was trying to get to bed, and all I could think about was the cartoon. And then I woke up mad at you and at the cartoon and at myself. So here we are.
I had this really funny interaction the Tuesday that the last Ahsoka was going to air, where I was talking to a client and I had to get his son's information, and his son's name was Anakin. And he says, he gave me his first name, and I was like,
no one's using that name unless it.
I was like, hold on. Is he named after the chosen one? And he was like, oh, bro, you know, may the force be with you. And then I spent like 25 minutes talking to this dude about Ahsoka and and theories and stuff. It was a really good time. Like, because by the way, I've had some Star Wars conversations at work that have gone south real fast.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got to try to. I mean, you've spoken about this in your pod plenty of times. I just blindly just go, no, it's good. I'm fine. Like, I don't even really. Uh-huh. I go, no, it's, you know, I'm happy with it. Like, what about this? I'm like, doesn't worry me. And even if it did, it's not a big deal.
Buddy, I have learned something over the last couple of months where I have a lack of self-preservation in situations like that. So I got a perfect example of this. I told a story on High Potion about going to buy some cards from a dude on Facebook Marketplace. But a couple of weeks back, we're having a meeting at work. And this dude on my team, we're waiting for our boss to come into the meeting. He's just making small talk, and he's kind of going around the room asking everybody what their favorite band is, right? And so it gets to me, and because I don't have a sense of self-preservation just to say something that people will know, I go, Tool. And he goes, what do you, is that actually a band? I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I was like, yeah. And he goes, why have I never heard of them? Are they new? And I was like, no, they've been around for like 30 years at this point. And he's like, that's weird. And then like he's looking them up and he's like, wow, their songs are long, huh? And I was like, yep, they sure are. And then around this time, my boss comes in and she's like, what are you guys talking about? And he was like, well, Richard says his favorite band is a band called Tool. And she goes, oh, they're weird. And I was like, yep, that's right. And he goes, all right, well, what's your second favorite band? And I go, oh, Coheed and Cambria. And then I had to spend the next few minutes explaining that I did not make this up. That was the real name of a band. And then finally he was like, all right, well, what about after that? And I said, Foo Fighters. And he goes, okay. Finally.
I should have said, I should have started with Bee Gees.
Yeah, yeah. And he goes, so what you're saying, Richard, is you like weird white boy music. And I was like, yes, that's,
thank you.
You've got it, Charles.
You got me.
Yeah.
What was his favorite band?
Jodeci.
See, I don't know who that is.
That's like a, they were like sort a
Christian
of a
band.
Is that like, no, they were like a R&B/hip-hop band, pretty big in, I want to say, maybe the mid-90s or so.
They might not have made it down here.
You know what, maybe Cisco of the Thong Song was in Jodeci.
Aware of Cisco.
Yeah, right. He was in one of those groups.
Is it like a Lionel Richie, what was the band that he was in, not the Thunderbirds?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, one of those things. Lionel Richie was in a famous band before he was in another, you know, one of those ones.
Okay, so Jodeci did not have Cisco on it, but apparently they had a spinoff band, which I also remember, Casey and JoJo. Have you ever heard of them?
No, not familiar. No, Lionel Richie was in the Commodores. Right, that's what it was.
Okay, okay. Yeah.
There's a few of those when they break out. Yeah, right. Well, that's better than getting pinned against a wall trying to, you know, defend Star Wars to someone who's already made their mind up, really.
No, the minute Star Wars comes up in any group meeting, I don't respond. I'm like, I'm not getting into this at work. Mm-mm.
Yeah. Oh, look, it's not, you know, I think people in my work know that I've taken time off for two celebrations, I think. Since, like, two celebrations since I've worked there? At least one. Maybe two. So they know.
Well,
that,
hold
like,
on.
You're...
Chicago.
No, Anaheim. I've done three celebrations, but my latest job, I've been the last couple of years. I think Anaheim.
Oh,
and...
okay. You started after
Chicago. Yeah, and London.
Chicago,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. So I did. Yeah, did do Chicago, which seems like a lifetime ago. Well, 5 years, I guess, because 20th Phantom Menace, now 25th Phantom Menace.
Mm-hmm. Yep. 2019.
It feels like that. Maybe they shouldn't
was
have made
just
such
yesterday.
A, yeah, well, maybe they shouldn't have made such a big deal about those 40th anniversaries. I feel like Star Wars turning 50 is such a big thing. What, are they just going to do the same thing they did for the 40th and just re-release those figures all over again?
They're going to, I mean, they're certainly going to do stuff, right? Like, there's no way they don't celebrate the 50th. It seems like they're on the zeros and five schedule. Have you ever heard that? I know sometimes you listen to the Completely Unnecessary podcast, right? And they say they only celebrate fives and zeros for anniversaries. It seems like Lucasfilm is on that schedule. Yeah. So I would imagine they're probably going to do a 50th celebration in 2027, which supposedly there's a Star Wars movie that year too.
Oh, look, it's gonna have to be. And then
they can't keep jerking me around this long, man. I can't.
If they get to Japan and they're just like, and then it's gonna be in Johannesburg, South Africa, and you're like, oh, come on, man.
Now I'm telling you guys, the minute they announce Star Wars Celebration Birmingham, Alabama, like, things are bad. They're real bad. They might actually reset the canon and make that Heir to the Empire movie at that point.
Oh, man. It's probably the same for Australia, to be honest. But yeah, look, Japan, but the plan is to go to Japan. We're planning a family holiday, actually. So we've talked about going to Japan. Kat and I went to Japan in 2013, pre-kids, just in Tokyo. Had an awesome time. And we've always wanted to go back. I mean, obviously, you know, children, the world, all that kind of stuff hasn't really happened. We think our kids are probably big enough that they'll be able to, we'll do a week or so and I'll do celebration because only 3 days as well. So it's a little bit more like, well, it's less of
manageable,
that, you know, because it's just every celebration I've been to, these 4 day ones, by the time you get to Sunday, you're just broken. You've had enough.
Yeah.
And then get the energy back on Monday because it's the end. So the Sunday is always the hardest day.
So it's Sunday, and then you just happen to be in the convention center and you run into your pal Rick Villanueva, who you've never met, and he's like, hey, can I take a picture with you and Johnny Grasso? And I look dead in the picture because it's Sunday of celebration and I was partying at the Steel Wars event the night before.
I love that photo. I just love next year when you make it to Japan Horse, when it happens, you just come in with the new makeover, you know, with like, let's get fillers. Does something happen? Like you got a bit of boat. You got this makeup on. You know, he's like,
I'll get lip filler.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's looking good. You got like that kind of twirly, like Hunger Games mustache going on.
Oh, heck yeah. I like that. Fancy haircut of some sort.
Wearing a suit. Yep. Just looking like $1 million. He's like, I'm not taking any risks of having a bad photo of this. It's just going to be.
Where's Rick? They'll be like, he didn't come. Whoa.
You better get him here.
you better get here, Rick. I got a redemption story.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, so that's the plan. We're gonna try and do that, and then I'll probably buy a kid's ticket for the 3 days, and then I'll take one of the kids each day if they're up for it, and if not, whatever, it doesn't really matter. The kids tickets aren't overly expensive. I'll get another shot in the lottery at least, you know. Maybe I'll just go, well,
I'll definitely buying tickets when they go on sale. So, you know, the plan is I'm going to buy a ticket for myself and the lady I'm seeing right now, cause she wants to go as well.
Yep.
We've been kind of, you know, talking about that. So I'm going to buy tickets, and then if I can make it, excellent. If not, I'm sure I won't have any trouble offloading the ticket.
Yeah. It feels like a real unknown in Japan. Cause it sort of feels, you know, it's become like Taylor Swift tickets the last few years. Because they're easier to offload, everybody just gets them, so they've got them. You know, we've been doing the get up at 2 a.m. kind of thing, you know, with the computers out, everybody's got the laptops, getting the tickets. And we've always got tickets and stuff, but if they go back to the States after 3 or 4 years, that is going to be a scramble for tickets. Like, they're going to have to pick the biggest possible venue. It will be a little bit of a madhouse, I think, everybody trying to get tickets to those ones, which is good, unless it's in Birmingham.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, if it's in Birmingham, I'm going to show all you guys a good time, but you guys just better know that's probably the last celebration. if they're down to Birmingham, Alabama as a possibility, like, you guys are going to have an amazing time. You're going to be like, wow, that was a lot of barbecue.
Damn, you're selling it.
But, hey, man.
I don't even know how you would get there from Australia. I think you'd have to fly. Well, it'd be like Chicago. We'd fly into LA and then domestic down to... It could be done.
Well, I don't know. Do they do flights from Australia to Atlanta? Do you know? Because Atlanta's an international airport, and it is.
Oh, they might do.
It's very close to Birmingham.
Already,
it's like an hour and a half.
I'm myself up for getting to Birmingham for celebration. For something that's not going to happen.
Well, hey, listen. We'll if it happens, the we're going to fill this basement up with air mattresses, and everybody's got a place to stay.
Ah, yeah, I love it. It'd be nice to have an Airbnb or a place to stay that doesn't get canceled. I think every celebration we've been to, our Airbnb has been canceled before celebration. We've had to get another one. Like without doubt.
Is that like all of a sudden they realize, oh, there's a convention coming and we want to cancel this and try to relist it higher? What happens with that?
Chicago was a few months out and London was pretty close. I think Anaheim, obviously COVID. And I was playing chicken with Airbnb because if you cancel it, you know, sometimes you just forego your money. So I was waiting for the host to cancel it. So I was basically just holding out, not doing anything until they said the borders were closed and there was nothing happening. So I had a reason to do it without losing my money. But yeah, I don't know. That was a whole big thing here because Taylor Swift was in Melbourne last weekend that Airbnbs were doing that, cancelling accommodation. And It's the Wild West out there in the Airbnb.
Especially when you're dealing with Taylor Swift. That is... She could do a Taylor Swift celebration for sure, and people would go. That fandom is massive.
She filled our football ground, which seats 100,000 people for 3 nights in a row. So she played the biggest shows of her life. And the people, she could have played 7 shows and it would have still sold out. When we were on Swift
Tour, I bet.
She's just, it was, and I had some friends who've gone. I had, one of my good friends took his daughters, and I saw him after the gig because it was my other friend's birthday. He came and met us afterwards, and I said, what was it like? He's like, it's the best thing I've ever. I mean, I was unbelievable. I had a better time than the girls did. You know, and he's got like his pink shirt on. He's,
you know, like Taylor Swift isn't necessarily my thing, but I definitely respect the hustle. Like, she is an incredible business lady and has cultivated quite the fandom. But, you know, back during the sequel trilogies, whenever my co-host Will on Blue Harvest would, you know, not in a mean way, but like, maybe throw a little shade towards the Raylos. I was like, hey man, don't do that. I do not want that Raylo heat. Because Will's not on social media. So if he gets the Raylos all whipped up, I'm the one that has Vegas. But I have decided you will never hear me say an unkind thing about Taylor Swift. I am not trying to get that Swifty smoke.
You don't need that. You invite everybody down to Celebration Birmingham to your place, and then your house gets torched. You're by the Swifties.
By Eric Struthers.
Yeah, by Eric Struthers. You let him into your house. And
yeah, man.
He always seems so nice on the surface. Yeah, so that's the plan. Japan's the plan. I like the idea of a 3 days. I just like the idea of it's going to be so the same but different. You know, everything's going to be in Japanese. Yeah. There's going to be... I just want to get a feel for what Japanese celebration fans are like. Do they listen to podcasts? Do I need to start tagging my stuff in Japanese? Is this a market that we need to tap? I'm going to do a Japanese-themed beanie.
I was going to ask. Yeah, what's the plan for the beanie for Japan?
Well, I'm thinking about either redoing, because they've all got like the logo on the front, the podcast logo, of either doing that or the... Because usually it has like the Star Wars, and then it has like London on the back or whatever.
Yeah.
Star Wars, SW, London. I've at least probably putting Tokyo or Japan in Japanese letters around it.
Okay.
And doing that and maybe even doing the logo in Japanese letters. It's just going to be how it prints. Does it look all right or does it look kind of, you know, yeah. English letters are just like blocks. You can kind of print that all right. If I do it in Japanese lettering, is it just going to look kind of stupid? But
yeah, and there's like a difference between, and listen, I wish I could explain it better, but there's a difference between katakana Japanese and hiragana Japanese.
Yeah.
So you could maybe look at either or. I don't really know.
Well, even if you look up, because I've done this, you look up like the Star Wars Japan's Twitter account, like even the handle, it's really, really long. It's like 25 characters long in order to translate. So I'm kind of going, am I just making this too difficult for myself? But there'll be a bit of trial and error. We'll give it a go. But it'll be some kind of Japanese themed thing.
I have my beanie collection down here in the basement.
Oh, nice.
Right now, Boba Fett's helmet is rocking one, and the Bo-Katan helmet is rocking one. I need to get a third helmet for the other one.
Love it. I always love when people, I think Chris Hall's got, he's got one skateboards. I think he sent me a photo. He's got you know, some cool stuff like that. So yeah, they're still floating around. The very last one from London went to a friend of the show, Matt Moll, because he was down from Sydney a few weeks ago and caught up for a beer and had been sitting in my study for
just
a year.
Waiting.
Just waiting, just the very last. And every time I do it, I get to down to the last one, I go, oh, I probably should have kept an extra one just in case I, you know, drop it down a ditch or something. But I'm like, oh well, when they're done, they're done. It's not the end of the world. It's
I'm going to work them into my display because I've got a lot of like celebration related ephemera from the two that I've been to, and those will definitely be part of it. I've gotten like a lot of like custom Blue Harvest stuff people have sent me as well. So I think there's going to be at least a shelf kind of devoted to Star Wars podcasting. You know, I've got like one of the Snoke Theory suckers that Steele did and all kinds of Steel Wars stickers. While I was packing, I came across so many different podcast stickers, like bricks of them. Steel Wars, Bad Motivators, even though they hated each other, you know.
Still do. Yeah, well, only one survived. Only it was one must fall, one must end. Yeah, I've got stickers. My Zune recorder has got a bunch of stickers on it, and I'm pretty sure there's a couple of Blue Harvest and probably a couple of Rogue Ones on there that are stuck on there, but yeah, I've got a little the little metal lunchbox that they had at Chicago that had the holiday special Boba Fett on it. Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only reason I got that was because some genius put a little Star Wars merch stand in the arena. I remember it was the only celebration they've done it. They had a splinter, so you could actually get some other stuff without having to go into the celebration store. And I picked it up there. It was like, oh, can I buy this? They're like, yeah. I'm like, why aren't there just little shops everywhere for this? They could just have them everywhere. I know you're as a man who sat in a line for 3 hours.
Yeah. It was a nightmare that first day. And enamel pins. I guess I got to be one of those dudes that gets like the cork board for all my enamel pins because I've got so many of them. So many enamel pins.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I take the extra suitcase with the beanies to give the beanies out, and then it just comes back filled with all the...
Full of Star Wars stuff. That's an X. I think I might just have to bring an empty suitcase to Japan.
Inside another suitcase. The trick is you get a big suitcase, you put a slightly smaller one in that and put all your clothes in it, and then take the one suitcase that's got two suitcases in it.
That's a really good idea.
And then when you get there, you pull it out, there's a suitcase inside.
Right, that is a really good idea. That's a pro tip. Because there's so much dumb stuff I'll buy in Japan before I even get to Celebration. I already know it.
Oh, I mean, I've watched a couple of those like video store, video game blogs, and there's I've been to the video game sort of, we were in Tokyo, we went to sort of like the video game district and things, but I was conscious that I was with Kat, like she's got no interest in spending too much.
Right.
So we sort of, you know, tearing through pretty quick and having a quick look and stuff and just out of curiosity, but yeah.
You know what I wanted to ask you? I've been dying to ask you this from last year. What'd you think of Spider-Man 2?
Yeah, game? I loved it. Yeah. Yeah,
so good,
great.
Right?
I love the story. I feel like it's a perfect distillation of Spider-Man stories.
Yeah.
Like it's like taking all like, the good bits and sort of funnel it into...
You know, as someone who... I'm a massive Spider-Man and X-Men are my thing, comic book-wise, right? And massive Spider-Man fan. And I am to Spider-Man canon what EU fans are to EU canon, right?
Yeah,
like...
Yeah.
There are some of those Spider-Man storylines that I view as like, it's corny to say, but sort of sacred, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they have handled those three games, you know, the two Spider-Man games and the Miles Morales game, where like it's its own universe and they're putting their own spin on the stories, like they have yet to make a decision that I'm unhappy with. And I even started Spider-Man 2 a little like kind of wondering like, how am I going to feel about, you know, who Venom was in the game? Not to give it away if people haven't played it.
I don't think it really
really does. Liked it.
Yeah.
It was really good.
But I think they can do, like, obviously, I think that all signs point towards a Venom game. That'll be the Miles Morales of this gen. But they could use Eddie Brock in that. They could just use him.
You know, there's a fight. It's in the last part of the game. You remember the big final fight with Venom kind of takes place all over the city.
You change locations
a lot. And there's a part where they're fighting on a chapel, on a church.
Yep.
And I kind of wondered if they were about to set up Eddie Brock. Because, you know, in the comics, that's where he is when he gets, you know, when he becomes Venom. So I kind of wondered if they were setting that up. And it didn't seem like they were, but... we're getting a Venom game, so yeah, that's definitely happening.
Yeah, I just gave away. When I upgraded my PS5, I took my PS4 down to my family's beach house because I didn't have a decent DVD player down there. And I just like, I need a DVD player. And then they put a smart TV in, so the DVD player became redundant, basically. So I just had this PS4 that was doing nothing. And I saw one of my good friends the other day, and his son had been going on about wanting to play Spider-Man. We didn't have, I'm like, take this PS4. Here's a bunch of games. So I gave him my copy of Spider-Man and Miles Morales, and I was like, just post it to him. So just play it. You know, someone's got to play it. I'd rather do that than it just sitting around doing nothing. And like, and I think it just arrived in the mail today because he messaged me just going, he's going to flip out. You know, he's only 11.
That's awesome.
Just like the PlayStation's. I'm like, go for it. Just get cracking on it.
And Spider-Man 2 was my game of the year last year. And like, just really well written. Now, there will be a day I replay it, and if I can figure out a way to skip the section where Mary Jane becomes Scream,
oh yeah,
I will. I got mad triggered in that section, buddy. I was like, this is too much. I can't wait for this to be over.
We're wrapping up here, but I mean, that was kind of what really annoyed me about the... not just Kill the Justice League, but also Gotham Knights, where it was like two studios that had the formula, and they both, neither, like, I was kind of going, well, all right, if Rocksteady's going to branch out, then fine. But that Batman Origin Games is pretty good. Just do another one of those, you know, WB Montreal or whatever, and just do another Arkham and use that roster. And like, neither of you got it. So we had two more bites at the apple. And I didn't get another
anything
at all. I was like, oh man! Like I got Gotham Knights for like $20, and I played through it, and it was all right. Well, I played for the story, but everything went against the mechanics of how I wanted to play an Arkham game.
Yeah,
and this Kill the Justice League one, I'm just kind of like, this just doesn't interest me. Maybe if it's $10, and I might play it for the story eventually. But
I could see maybe one day getting talked into buying it on sale to play with a group of friends because it's multiplayer and co-op. And, you know, if I'm playing with my friends, I can make a bad game fun, you know. But, yeah, it's a bummer because those Arkham games are so good, and it's been so long since the last one. And then we finally get something from Rocksteady, and it's not good.
Yeah. Yeah, a friend of mine who I saw in London, one of my really good friends there, who used to work for, I think she's been on before, she used to work for the BBC Films, and she worked with Lucasfilm for a while when they were shooting Star Wars there had a program where they were putting people from different backgrounds onto film sets. So,
okay.
And she like was in a meeting with Kathy Kennedy, you know, you know, she's basically still just like, I had to sign an NDA like this, like a phone book. I still cannot talk in detail about stuff, but I can give you... But she left that job last year, and she's working for WB now. Like, she's working for W Entertainment. And I saw her last year just after that Suicide Squad stuff came. And she's going, oh, I just started, and everyone's really worried about this. Suicide killed the job. I'm like... Yeah, let me tell you why people probably are.
Yeah.
You're going to have an interesting couple of months, I think.
Yeah.
I'm sure she's gotten to the swing of things now. But it was really weird because she said that she got they've got like an internal version of whatever it is, Netflix or whatever their equivalent is, but it's a WB-only one that has anything that WB has ever made in the history of ever that their staff has access to. So if you work for WB, you get a special access to a screening thing that has every Warner Brothers thing that's ever come out.
And that's awesome.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
That's awesome. Man.
It's like, I'm just going to watch some Batman the Animated Series for however long. Mate, we've already hit time. Just like that.
All right. It went by quick, man.
I know, it always does. It always does. It's always too long. We always take too long to do this, and it always goes by too fast.
Super fast.
It's just, you know, but tell the good people about Blue Harvest going strong, number one in the game. and High Potion, which I love. I love High Potion as well too.
Thank you, buddy.
Even though I don't have all the references, I don't play as many games as you guys do. But I, even when you guys talk about like Japanese RPGs, I'm like, I'll listen.
Oh, I'm listening. I love a Japanese RPG, Josh. That's my favorite genre. I got the complete. So you know Robbo?
Yeah.
So he has a video game podcast he's on called HG101, and they release books that like they're pretty serious. They have different guidebooks. They released a hardback book called The Complete Guide to the Japanese Role-Playing Games. And every time I tried to buy one, it was on sale. And I finally got, or it was sold out rather, finally got one on like their fourth printing. And it is incredible. Oh nice. My goodness. I'm in heaven. So Blue Harvest, we put out episodes every Friday, or I guess maybe Saturday if you're in Australia.
That's my mowing the lawns listening. So anytime I'm like, I have to mow the lawns, I'm like, oh, thank God there's a Blue Harvest. I can just put my noise-canceling earphones in. That's what I mow my lawns to.
We, you know, every Friday, for the most part, talking mostly about Star Wars. It's been a little lean lately, but we got Bad Batch, so we'll get back on track probably. And High Potion is the video game podcast I do with my buddy Steve. It comes out every Monday. And we're coming up on 3 years of not missing Monday. So discipline. Having a pretty good run on
discipline,
that one.
Man. Yeah, man. Discipline, yeah. I do not know.
You know, it helps that we, much like you, we put a hard try to. Sometimes you have Michael Pappas on and he goes a little longer, but we put a hard 1 hour limit on our episodes. And since it's not topical necessarily, like Blue Harvest, we can record. You know, we can bank them and have them scheduled to come out, which
helps.
So if you're
like on a run, you could just knock another one out. And
We were
doing that. When I was doing Peppa Pig, which is a bit sporadic these days, we'd do a couple in a row. We started doing four in a row because they're only short episodes. We're like, this is too much. Let's just do two. And then we had a busy year last year, but we're getting back on that. But so thanks, everybody. People who've been watching, I've been using YouTube to unbox all these like Kenner figure deliveries I've been getting. So people, I mean, we're not talking crazy numbers, but like a couple of hundred people are just like watching this. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. People are watching them. I've got a few. I've got a box right here and I'm waiting for something else to come and I'll do another one hopefully this week. But which has been really cool. And what else has been going on with the podcast? That's about it really. Just getting ready for Bad Batch. Oh, and I might be on the Star Wars Underworld in the next couple of weeks. I got tapped by Ben Hart to talk Bad Batch. So keep an eye out on that if I can.
Heck yeah.
If I can pull that off, make the time zones work. But Hawes, always a pleasure, my friend. I will see you at Celebration Birmingham, if not earlier in Japan.
I sure hope so, buddy.
And I'll catch you in the real world.
Absolutely.
Okay, see you, mate.
See you, buddy.